Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
All right, welcome to another episode of Mystery on the Rocks, the show where unsolved mysteries and cocktails come together in a cocktail of a podcast. We'll write a good intro at some point.
Why bother now?
I know, it's too late. We're a billion episodes in. We might as well not bother.
Done.
I'm Masood. I'm always Masood. Masood Miles. With me as always is Suze Kepner.
Yeah!
Hey, yeah. And Chris Stokes.
Hello. I waved then. No one can
see you. Yeah, I know. No one can see you.
He What's waved like? To the readers.
Yeah.
Welcome. How are you guys doing?
All right. How are you doing?
Not too bad. You know.
You're torturing your child at the moment, aren't you, apparently?
with sleep training, yes. That's what we're doing. We are, some people would call it torture, but they haven't been on the receiving end of sleep training.
When you said that's what you were doing, the way you framed it, it was a roller coaster.
Yeah.
You went,
this is going to sound really evil, but yeah. Can you hear my daughter crying?
Yeah, because that's what
like,
sleep training
what's going
is.
On?
Sleep training is you basically leave the baby to cry, and then you come in and soothe it, and then leave again.
Right.
And you do that repeatedly with certain intervals, increasing in time at each interval. And they're supposed to just kind of accept that as like, okay, that's fine. But, you know, babies are, kind of evolutionarily evolved to like just cry until their needs are met. So you're like sitting in the other room going, oh, this means that somebody's gonna call the police. Somebody's gonna call the police.
Is there a way you could just like noise cancelling headphones your way through it?
I mean, that's what this podcast's about. That's why I'm here. So I can kind of just...
Perfect. Oh, well, I don't have to do that with my cats at all. They didn't need any training. They sleep through most things.
Mystery on the rocks, oh yeah. Mystery on the rocks, yeah. Mystery on the rocks, yeah.
Wait, hang on a second. Who's that coming through the
door? Is that former Scottish MP Danielle Rowley?
What? Rowley.
Or Rowley. Let me try that again.
Masood checked twice before the podcast.
Rowley, right? Okay, let me do that again. Is that former Scottish MP Danielle Rowley?
Hi, guys.
Fucking hell.
Rowley! You said Rowley and then corrected yourself. Danielle,
I feel like
we've
got into Masood's head about this a little bit.
A little bit.
I answer to many things, don't you worry.
Hello, thanks for joining us.
Masood, what are you drinking? Yes.
This is a margarita.
Oh,
anytime
classic.
It's sunny, I just always have a margarita.
Okay.
Although there is something is that there is nothing sadder than making a margarita for yourself. It is absolutely a party drink, and you're just like, yeah, oh, it's just me. It's just me having this.
I see torturing his kid and drinking margaritas.
Dad of the year.
Danielle, what are you drinking?
I have a really nice glass, but in it I've got like sparkly mango and passion fruit juice because I didn't think that I could handle a cocktail on a Monday night. But this makes me feel like an adult, so...
It does. It looks like if that was served to you in a bar and they said that'll be £14, please, I'd go, fine.
Yeah.
It's a really nice glass, so it's probably the drink is worth it.
I'm paying for the glass. You're renting the glass. That's what you're paying for.
Yeah.
What is it on the glass? Are they sunflowers?
Yeah. I got this for my 30th, which was not that long ago.
Oh, it's a stunner. You could put anything in that. You could have put some old piss in there and everyone would just go, oh, it's beautiful. It's inverted commas mango.
And Suze, of course, being the piss connoisseur, knows that old piss is not as good.
Yeah. I was like, I'm going to make it extra bad and say old piss.
How old is this piss?
Ugh. Oh, God, it's awful.
Mature.
Fetch me.
Mature. Thank you very much.
Who's been leaving it near the heater in the basement?
Oh, whoa.
This won't be worth anything when I give it to my son at his graduation.
Oh, thanks, Dad. A bottle of old piss.
In this situation, hooray. I'm the dad, and my son is 21.
What have you been up to, Danielle? During your what have you been doing with you?
I don't know. I started off being like, I'm going to read 500 books. I'm going to do yoga every day. I'm going to learn 5 languages, and I'm going to befriend all of the animals in the neighborhood. And I've read half a book. And I've eaten a lot of biscuit.
That's like yoga.
Yeah, exactly. I've done a bit of yoga, but like, whenever there's a bit halfway through and the telly yoga lady's like, okay, now you're doing well, have a rest. I'm like, I am doing well. And then I fall asleep. So,
Jesus.
Are you already on the couch watching the yoga? Just like, yeah, I'll get up in a minute. Yeah,
is it Adrienne?
Well. Yeah.
I haven't done any of hers. I've been doing my friend Joe Leather, is his real name. We both trained at the same place, but he now is a yoga instructor, and he says like, oh, it's low impact exercise. And what a fucking liar.
Sorry, I think napping is very energetic.
Oh God, I wish I could fall asleep in Joe's classes. He can see me.
Do Adrienne's, because she can't see you and she tells you you're doing really well. So
yeah,
that's
good.
Like, I like
thanks.
That. I'm that's doing really you're just I like. Can. Yeah. No, you know what? During this lockdown time, I do need some affirmations. It's really good.
Chris, what are you drinking?
Yeah, what are you drinking, Chris?
It's supposed to be a left hand, but I have to do my own variation on it because I haven't got all
any
of
hands?
The ingredients for a left hand. Yeah.
So
basically, what this is rye whiskey with sweet vermouth, and you're supposed to use Aperol or Campari, but I don't have that.
Oh,
so instead,
piss.
Yeah,
piss.
I used really fresh new piss.
yes.
Oh, Your Majesty.
No, I used I used this leftover grapefruit gin liqueur.
That sounds so good.
So I put that in it, and then you're also supposed to use something called Mole bitters, and I don't have Mole bitters.
I love how you were like, oh, you know, we don't have all this stuff, but then I've got this leftover fucking crazy gin.
I've got some brine. I put some brine
in it. Well, I figured because, like, Campari or Aperol is meant to be used in lieu of sort of like a bitter citrus thing.
Yeah.
Is it? Oh,
yeah.
Right.
So, so I figured bitter citrus, the closest I've got is this grapefruit gin liqueur.
Fair enough.
And then also for bitters, you're supposed to use Mole bitters, which are kind of like chocolatey and spicy.
Oh, they sound nice.
Yeah, well, I don't have them. So I used nut bitters, Creole bitters, and I put a little bit of chili in it.
Chris, what is wrong with you?
And then there's a bit of grapefruit peel in there, and a bit of lemon balm. As garnish. And do you know what? Only... It's really nice. It's the nicest one I've made for myself since Masuda stopped making the drinks for it.
Oh, very good. It looks nice. It looks classy. It looks like...
Tasty.
Same bar as Danielle's beautiful glass and they said, oh, it's £13, you go, all right, fine, but I wish it was in a nicer glass.
Yeah, whereas I asked for a margarita, they went, well, there's a glass of warm piss for you. Yeah, you want.
And then there's me at the back of the bar. Yeah. Aged 15 years. And there's me at the back of the bar going, woo,
But it can no longer be called a left hand, so I've decided to call it a left wing.
Ah,
nice. I approve.
Nice. What about you, Suze? What do you got?
I've fucking given up. Haven't given up drinking, but I have given up. I've got vanilla vodka and bitter lemon, right?
Ooh, okay.
And I call it an Edgelord cream soda.
Nice. That is. I have to say,
it's good.
We have to get all of your drinks names if we ever make a cocktail book because that is the greatest. An Edgelord cream soda.
Edgelord cream
That's
soda.
Fantastic. We should have a Suze section of the book where it's all of your drinks.
If we ever do that book with all the recipes, the ones that we do for Suze, like a fuck off and a, and a Corona Palooza and an Edge Lord.
Oh yeah, Detroit.
Edge Lord cream soda. Yeah,
they
Detroit.
Should be, the style should be like Wax Crayon.
No, fucking Comic Sans, all in Comic Sans. I just got Edge Lord cream soda all over myself.
That's, I mean.
Danielle, look away. Look away, Danielle. I don't want you to see
that. Say
like
that
this.
For the OnlyFans, Suze.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was going to say, that's
hey,
yeah.
hey, pervert.
Yeah. I got Edgelord cream soda.
Oh, God.
Show feet.
Danielle, do you get any political perverts messaging you?
That's a good point,
do you have an OnlyFans? yeah, I've had quite a lot of weird, like really weird messages over the past few years. Yeah, it's really odd.
Ooh. Is it like far right who want to be punished?
Oh, well,
so they're like, tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah. Oh, give us an oversight of what's going to happen to the country the next 4 years if you get into power.
How much
oh.
are you going to tax them?
What's this about free internet? Tell me more.
Nationalize me.
Oh boy!
I wonder if there could be like an OnlyFans for politicians. That would be. Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be interesting, would it? It'd be awful, but you know.
I don't know.
It'd be funded disproportionately as well, in the same way that election campaigns are.
It's a good point.
Chris, what have you got for us as a mystery today? Because I feel like doing some solving.
Yeah, now I feel like it might be a little bit, you know, when podcasts have, let's say, you know, an Asian guest on, and then they do a mystery from the Orient. It's like,
it's like, are you about to culturally appropriate me?
I feel a little bit like this now because we've got
a mystery from the Orient. Now.
Yeah, we've got a mystery from the Orient. It's the disappearance of Victor Grayson. Have you heard of Victor Grayson?
No.
Okay, so the reason that I chose this is because he was a firebrand socialist politician, and he was a member of parliament for about 3 years, 1907 to 1910. It was a shock victory that shook the establishment. He won a by-election in the Colne Valley. It was an area where they didn't think they would go for him, but he won the suffragette vote because he was adamant about women being able to vote.
Oh my God, I love him.
Nice.
Sounds great. So he campaigned very hardline socialist policies. Won. He was defeated in the next election, and then 10 years after that, in 1920, he just vanished. All trace.
What?
He just vanished.
Well, like vanished. Like what,
vanished.
Like,
just
what?
Went. The last he was seen was he was drinking with some friends, I think in Leicester Square. Yeah. And he said, I need to go. He had a message delivered to him. It was either telegram or telephone. So he got called away to have him to take a message. And he went. He had to go to a hotel in Leicester Square for some reason. That's what he told his friends. I have to go to this hotel in Leicester Square. And then he was never seen again.
What?
That's not the whole story. No. It's the whole story of what happened to him, and why it's a mystery. He's gone. That's it. So it's that Victor Grayson vanished.
Yeah.
But like his background is really interesting, and I'd never heard of it before.
Yeah.
This ought to be a huge story.
So he was. Well, it kind of is. They commemorate, like, it's been 100 years this year since he went missing.
Right.
And it was in September. So I don't know whether they're going to do anything. But occasionally, when I was researching it, there are articles of events that cover lectures about him. Mm-hmm. And there's been a couple of biographies, but yeah, he's not as famous. He was called Labour's lost leader.
Really?
In that people are saying that he should have led Labour at some point.
Right. That's what people call me. Yeah.
I've still got my fingers crossed for that one. Can I be your hype man?
Absolutely.
When you eventually run for Labour leader, I won't ruin anything. like I ruined the last election.
You did that single-handedly.
I did.
Yeah, I blame you.
There were a couple of days after the last election where I did feel like I had ruined it single-handedly. Yeah. It's a terrible mixture of low self-worth and egomania.
When you say hype man, are you gonna do it in the classic kind of hip-hop sense, where you're like, you know, wear a big clock around your neck and just be like, welcome to the stage, yeah, and just like shout every time, just like say the last thing that Danielle says again really loudly. It's like, so we're gonna nationalize,
and I'm like, eat the rich.
That's right, son. Yeah.
Here's the thing, right? Victor ran. He obviously, it was a by-election, by the way, that he won. That's how mm-hmm. he became an MP.
A by-election. What is? I'm not entirely familiar with, and I imagine some of our listeners are not entirely familiar with British politics. Or
well, you're so
what
lucky.
A by-election can be an election that it happens in one constituency, and it's because something has happened between general elections.
I see. Okay, yeah.
Someone
yeah.
like if someone dies.
Yeah. Or, so like if a member okay. of parliament dies.
Yeah. So right. yeah.
So it can be if they step down as well.
So with a general election, which is when all constituencies vote, the eye is very much on who's going to be prime minister, and only right. nerds get into who's won what seat. But a by election, because it's the only one happening, like all eyes are on it.
Right, okay.
Certainly in this case, especially when there was no Tiger King back then, everybody was focusing on this, and it was this huge story. And also, he was a shock victory. Like, he won a majority over the Liberal Party and
the
Tory
cat.
Party.
No.
And he was standing for the Independent Labour Party.
Oh, this is sort of pre
yeah, to begin with, but there was a mainstream Labour Party then. Mm. But okay. He wanted to stand for the Independent Labour Party, but they didn't like him because he was too socialist. No. And so he stood in,
this
as
sounds,
an independent.
Thank God we learned our lesson.
So he stood as an independent. Right. So a bit of background on him, first of all. He was born in 1881, all right? So when he mm-hmm. became an MP and won this by-election, he
Young.
Was 25 years old.
Wow.
But then that's like having a 60-year-old MP now.
Yeah, well, he's young.
Yeah. And also, yeah. he dropped out of university to pursue politics. Halls of make-believe.
That's what he's called
go,
university.
He wanted to go and live in the real world.
And then he went into parliament.
Yeah. Yeah. Hang on a minute, yeah.
Born in 1881, his mother wanted him to go into the clergy, but he didn't want to do that. He joined the Independent Labour Party, and the main objective of that was to secure the collective ownership of the means of production, distribution and exchange.
Okay.
And leading figures in the Independent Labour Party were Keir mm-hmm. Hardie, George Bernard Shaw, among others, Ramsay MacDonald as well.
Yeah, answers on a quiz show that's on TV. Yeah, yeah.
And he was born in Liverpool. He's from Merseyside. Make believe refuge. That's what he said about university. It was
make believe refuge.
And he intended to work in the real world.
Right.
He gained a reputation for being a really good orator.
Okay.
And so, like most days, he could be found standing on his soapbox giving lectures about socialism.
Is that an actual literal soapbox? Do people literally stand on soapboxes?
That was
that
what, yeah,
thing?
That was what it used to be. Because obviously it's like a stage you can carry with you.
Mm. Right.
Jump on. Soapbox. Yeah.
The university authorities were concerned that he was neglecting his studies. And so they asked one of the Independent Labour Party leaders, Philip Snowden, to speak to him. And he was unable to convince him to continue.
Oh,
wow.
He was
like,
no.
They cared back then, as opposed to now where they're like, please stop smoking weed. And they're like...
I do really love that his university weren't like, okay, you're not pulling your weight, we're calling your mother, but they're like, we're calling the Labour Party.
Yeah, I like it.
So, like, if you misbehave, Daniel, do they call Jeremy?
Yeah. His phone would be off the hook if that happened. For Jeremy.
Jeremy, we've heard that Danielle's been appearing on podcasts. Telling us just before we went on air, which is weird because we only just saw you when you came in the bar, but you were saying that there's another MP, there's a Tory MP with their name spelt the same as yours.
Yeah, so
Can you repeat the story for the reader?
Well, so my surname is Rowley, and although I told the speaker, John Bercow, many times how to pronounce it. He'd always say, Danielle Rowley. And then one day I thought, oh, you know, there's this Tory MP, Lee Rowley. I'll try and chat to him and ask how he pronounces it. And then maybe we can bond over the speaker getting her name wrong or something. I don't know. I was trying to be friends with young people and there weren't many in Parliament. So I went over, I was like, oh, hi, Lee, I'm Danielle. And he just looked at me. And I was like, Danielle Rowley, you know, same name. How do you pronounce your name? Is it Rowley or Rowley? And then he replied, but I was really none the wiser because he was really quite posh. So he just said, like, Rowley. I was like, oh, was that a Rowley or a Rowley?
It was just like a slur.
Yeah.
Now, anyway, go and make me some tea.
Yeah.
So where were we? Oh, yeah, so he dropped out of university to pursue politics. This might be a bit more note-heavy than previous episodes because he said a lot of cool things. And listeners, I don't know what your political persuasions are, but if you're still listening by now, you've gathered that we're all leftists, right?
Red menace. Yeah. Well, if they're listening, if they're like long-term listeners, they'll have heard the episode with Poppy that went out on the day the election was called. And I was out of my fucking mind that day. I just
weirdly,
we all just kept shouting vote Labour.
That's such a shame because that episode was recorded on the day the election was called and went out
on the day of the election.
On the day of the election,
I remember now.
So it was listening back was a thoroughly depressing experience.
Yeah, precious memories.
I remember listening to it on the bus and going, oh, what have we done?
This is why I blamed myself.
That'd be so weird, Ed, if somebody saw you crying on the bus and was like, oh my God, son, are you okay? What are you listening to? Just my own podcast. So he dropped out of university.
Yeah.
And then...
to pursue politics.
When is
politics? Is that a thing? Can you do that? I mean, I always just assumed if you're going to pursue politics, you probably should have some sort of university thing.
No, not... Well, I mean, like, you can join any political party, can't you?
What? I could just do that? I mean, I don't really... I'm drinking a margarita, so probably not.
Join Labour today, Masood.
Join Labour today. Yeah. I mean, I always vote them, so I'm you know.
He always votes.
Yeah, I always vote. I always cast them a vote.
I want Masood to be a politician.
I always draw a little smiley face in the box.
Yeah, always. Sir, you can't draw a tiny smiley face. It's not how this works.
Masood in the ballot box writing no thanks next to all the ones he doesn't like.
Do you know, it's
because
things.
Of me that all the votes are thrown away. Sorry, what were you saying, Dan?
One of the funniest things on election night, well, apart from when I lost my job live on the telly.
Oh, my God. Bringing it up.
The thing is, I was going to ask you this question in that order. What was it like losing? And then I want to go back and ask you, what was it like to win?
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, it was a really difficult election, so I wasn't really shocked, but I was just so sad because there was loads that I wanted to do and I had loads of great ideas, and I mean, I thought they were great ideas, but
of course.
I think during the time that I was an MP, loads of people were like, oh, it's good because you can pick campaigns that you want to work on and different areas that you're passionate about. But because Brexit was happening, there wasn't really a chance to do very much. Everything was just constant Brexit. So yeah, I was really sad that I didn't get to do a lot of the like local projects and things that I wanted to do. But, you know, it was a bit of a weird... 2 and a half years anyway, so
it must have been, it was kind of like an election was looming throughout, wasn't it? It was very weird.
You were a member of parliament for about as long as Grayson was then.
Oh yeah,
1907 to 1910. And were you a little bit older because he was 25?
Yeah, I was 27 when I was elected.
Right.
That's still quite young though. You wouldn't.
It's amazing
for an MP.
Yeah. I was youngest Labour MP, and I also really didn't expect to win, and I don't think many people expected me to win, so it was quite a surprise, like with him as well.
Yeah,
because we're in a time now with Victor Grayson where before Labour as we know it. Kind of existed.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the reason it caused I'll skip over this one thing because he wrote a letter to his friend that said, you've probably read about the unemployment disturbances. The next few weeks promise some stormy scenes. These are glorious days and we youthful warriors should be brightening our armour and poising for the fight. Lancashire is in a state of seething fermentation and I want God to send a fire to burn up some of the already smouldering rubbish.
Oh, that's really cool.
That's good.
Yeah, because...
Oh, I bet the Tories hated him.
Because unemployment at that time in that area, in the northwest, was quite high.
Okay,
and he had been going to demonstrations and became a really popular and effective speaker. That was 1905, and then in 1906 he withdrew from university.
Right.
And then his subsequent political rise was huge. Like,
right.
Cool. Oh. Yeah.
In 1907, when the by-election happened in Colne Valley, the Independent Labour Party selected him as their candidate. And in the past, there'd been an arrangement where the Labour movement supported the Liberal Party candidate in return for helping winning other seats elsewhere Labour Party candidate.
God, so that's not a new thing that they are like, do a deal.
So the executive of the Labour Party didn't endorse him as their candidate.
Oh.
Right.
And so he ran as an independent.
So, okay, so they had a problem with him having that support?
Why, yeah, because it kind of went against this sort of, like, whether it was an official or unofficial, there was an agreement there.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So he wins. So he's made a lot of enemies, it sounds like. Like, a lot of people are like, this guy.
He'd go and speak at these places, and they'd all fall for him because he was huge, like, emphatic.
Because
there are quotes here from people that watched him speak. I can see him now in front of the co-op at the marketplace in Marsden. They had a wagon for a platform. He seemed so enthusiastic about everything he attempted. He gave you the impression that this is what we want and this is what we must have. It was infectious. People went haywire. They went mad at his meetings.
Oh, wow. I don't know if you've been to Marsden now, but it's pretty much the same. You go in front of a co-op, someone pulls up in a wagon, they start talking.
I was in the co-op today, down where I live, just picking up some apples and a cucumber. Yeah, no, very similar.
You didn't fancy speeching in front of it?
No, I did. I stood outside the co-op and I was like, you're all pricks, this town sucks. And they all listened.
And so because they refused to back down, he stood as an independent socialist candidate.
So are there people at this point who are like actively kind of showing that they don't like this guy? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like they're kind of being like,
yeah. So the leader, Keir Hardie, wasn't happy with the fact that I don't like this man, but that can't be helped. Mr. Grayson's work in the movement, valuable as it had been, was a matter of very few years. There was neither anger nor bias against Mr. Grayson, but simply a desire that men who had grown grey in the movement should not feel that they were being pushed aside to make room for younger men.
Danielle, do you think that did you feel this happen to you? People be like, this young blood coming in. You know what I mean? Like the feel that you were
stirring things up for your candidacy?
I don't know. I think locally people were really quite pleased because they know me. Like, I've been really active locally for quite a long time. But then, I think in Parliament it was strange because you were kind of like the new kid at school and you were young and, you know, people would kind of look at you like, are you here to clean? What's going on?
I mean, is it quite cliquey?
Yeah.
Is Parliament cliquey?
Yeah, a bit. Right. Like, I think it was nice because in a way a lot of people from Labour immediately came up and they're like, okay, you're new, you're young, you need a hand, we'll put our arm around you. So that was quite nice. Right. But there were sometimes you'd go into like the tea room or whatever and you'd know that you couldn't sit at any of the spare seats on the table.
Oh god,
that's
like it's like high school in prison where you're just like
can't sit with us.
Suze, you should write the parliamentary Mean Girls.
Oh my god, I'm gonna do it.
That would be 100%. Amazing.
Just like old grey men going, go sit somewhere else. I heard she's her parents have got like one car between them. That's pathetic.
Do you know they don't even have a summer house?
I'd watch this. I'd watch the hell out of this.
And they get your name wrong on purpose. Yeah, they get your name. It's like old men getting your name wrong on purpose. They're like, so Dantel, where do you summer?
That when Reese Mogg reclined over the. No, there's someone sitting here. There's someone sitting here.
This is reserved for my friends if they show up.
So he's stirring things up. People are like, this guy, this
guy. Yeah, but
it
was still like very much a, because he was bordering on, so it was reported, like they'd smear, like say he was a communist and stuff.
Yeah, right. Basically, yeah. That's what you're saying.
Well, really? They used that as an attack? I've
wasn't very popular either. So the local newspaper, the Colne Valley Guardian, was shocked by the appeal of his campaign with normal people. But class was a big thing.
And it was a big thing, right. Okay.
He was saying things like, they're exploiting you.
Right. And they went, yeah, they are. Right.
And they started to come round to it as well, which is why his meetings were so... And so he campaigned for votes for women as well, like I said.
Yeah.
And
communist.
To the point where Emmeline Pankhurst visited
Fucked
the town
him.
And supported.
Sorry.
Could you imagine?
That's the worst thing I've said on this podcast. And the bar was pretty high for worst things I've said on this podcast.
You've said some pretty dreadful things. And
yeah,
I'm
that was definitely
that
the worst one.
You called that as your worst thing?
That's the worst one. Nah. I think that's worse than when we were talking about him jizzing up the walls of his own castle.
Nah, that's not that bad. That was light and amusing.
That was hot.
Yeah, yeah.
That was hot.
This we're talking about Pankhurst like doubling down, having a couple of going to the gin house, sitting down with old Grayson, being like, "Hey, have another gin. Come on, let's do this."
Hey, baby, give me a vote, and I'll give you something you can take home to mama. It's a baby.
But in 1907, like suffrage was not a popular idea.
No.
Yeah. Right.
Like in general.
Yeah.
So it was the free broadband of its time.
I don't think that's the worst. That's probably the best, actually. That's a top five right there.
I want my free extra fast broadband fucking
trying to
live stream with my fucking internet.
Do you want to know what he said about women's suffrage?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say about broadband. I was like, yeah, I would love to know what he thought about broadband.
He was very ahead of his time.
What he said about broadband was, I believe Nikola Tesla has got some ideas. I don't understand them. But what he said about women's suffrage was, the placing of women in the same category constitutionally as infants, idiots and peers does not impress me as either manly or just. While thousands of women are compelled to slave in factories, etc., in order to earn a living, and others are ruined in body and soul by unjust economic laws created and sustained by men, I deem it the meanest tyranny to withhold from women the right to share in making the laws they have to obey.
Ooh.
Should I be honoured with your support, I am prepared to give the most immediate and enthusiastic support to a measure giving women the vote on the same terms as men. This is as a step to the larger measure of complete adult suffrage.
Man.
That's amazing.
Now, if he had an OnlyFans, I would watch that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I bet he was knee-deep in activist pussy.
Knee-deep in just activist women, like, just throwing their knickers at him.
Yeah.
Those big old knickers at him.
Like,
do you
want to
know what the turnout was for this by-election?
Yeah.
Loads.
88%.
Ooh. Bloody hell.
That was the turnout,
insane.
And he received a majority over both. He had two opponents, Liberal Party and Conservative, and he won over both of them.
Wow.
So why is something like that so high, and yet there's always these stats like now where they're like, oh, turnout is like bleh, it's like real
60%.
Low or whatever. Like,
because,
why is that?
Because we've got Tiger King now.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay, right.
There are people who, when Al Murray was running against Farage in 2015...
Yeah.
Like, he ran as the pub landlord in 2015 to sort of, as a fuck you to Farage.
Yeah.
He would, you know, he went round campaigning as the pub landlord, and he would meet people who'd be like, oh my God, it's the pub landlord. And he'd go, yeah, how are you voting in the election? And they would go, what election? And this is like, the 2015 election was,
right.
It wasn't a nothing election. Yeah. Like,
right. So people just don't, like you said, the Tiger King thing, they just don't really care. Anymore?
They just don't want to engage because they see it as something that doesn't involve them. Yeah.
So he won the election, the by-election, which was massively unexpected.
Okay.
And then the
speeches like that, I'm like, no, I think that's pretty good.
But you know when a left-wing politician does well, the right-wing press.
They suddenly
realize that they have a job to do.
Yeah.
and so they
hear that, the Sun? Oh, I don't think they're listening.
Yeah, so the Daily Express, they reported that his victory illustrated the menace of socialism. And so funny. 2 days after the election took place, this is a quote from them, the red flag waves over the Colne Valley. The fever of socialism has infected thousands of workers who, judging from their merriment this evening, seem to think Mr. Grayson's return means the millennium for them.
Fantastic.
The millennium.
Well, this is ages before the millennium. It's closer to
the one we just experienced than the previous one. But
those absolute drama queens.
And I have his victory speech here as well.
Yeah.
That's kind of classic.
He went up on stage and he went fuck y'all and then dropped the mic.
Okay, so in his victory speech, he said, "The very first joy that comes to my mind is this, that this epoch-making victory has been won for pure revolutionary socialism. You have voted, you have worked for socialism. You have voted, you have worked for the means of life to be the property of the whole class instead of a few small classes. We stand for equality, human equality, sexual equality. It is a splendid victory, comrades."
That's brilliant.
That was his victory speech.
So I like that he put comrades in there to be like, "You think I'm a commie? Bam!" Was that commie?
I'm gonna Google a picture of him because at the moment, you're gonna
jizz straight away.
Oh, yeah. Does he look tall and weird?
He's a good looking bloke.
Does he look tall? That's your thing,
Victor Grayson.
Yeah, that's my
thing. He'd get it. Look, he's giving a speech here. And
are you googling him as well, Daniel?
Yeah,
I'm gonna Victor Grayson.
Look at him. He looks Victor like a Grayson. Movie star.
Yeah, he was very popular with ladies and
a
with
movie
men.
Star. A movie star in Ooh. What movie?
Ooh,
what movie is he?
Green's a horrible color on you.
Actually, I think he does look quite cool. I'd hang out with him. I'd totally hang
cool
with
as
him.
Hell. Mm.
He's got a Brando thing to him.
He became an MP because of this, of course. That's how it works. And in his maiden speech in the House of Commons, he criticised the recent decision to grant diplomat Evelyn Baring, who was the first Earl of Cromer, £50,000 for his services in Egypt. £50,000 at that time was...
Oh, that's loads.
Yeah.
It was more than a million.
Yeah, it must be. Whoa. Yeah.
For his services in Egypt. And he attacked the government for rewarding a man for consolidating imperialism. He added that Cromer had already been well paid, while outside the four walls of this house, people are dying of starvation. And he pointed at the government front benches, and he said he was looking forward to the day when those seats will be occupied by socialists sent there by an indignant people. You're still waiting, mate.
He's painting a target on his back as he is saying that, but I like it. I like how forward he's being.
Yeah.
But like everyone's going, okay, polish your guns, man. This guy's
I'm
going to
eat a big handful of feta cheese and dream about him tonight.
He is.
A year after he won, he 31st of October 1908, mm-hmm. he just stood up in the House of Commons and he shouted out, "I wish to move the adjournment of the House so that it can deal with the unemployment question. People are starving in the streets." He refused to sit down, and so he was escorted from the Commons. As he left, he turned to Labour members. Bearing in mind the mainstream Labour Party was a very different prospect back then. He turned to the Labour members and shouted, "You're traitors. Traitors to your class," as he was dragged out of the House.
So they were basically New Labour.
I think I know who made this man disappear. Everyone else in Parliament.
It's pretty obvious what happened to him. It's still technically unsolved, but
I mean, this guy.
But
I
it's
love
a long
this
time
guy.
Later. Like it's yeah, 10 it years 10 after years later. He lost his seat.
Yeah, that is true. But a war happened.
He
did that. He got escorted out, and then he was suspended. He was suspended from the House of Commons.
Right.
But it obviously, of course, it provoked hostilities from Labour. Because he said, "Your traitors." There's a quote here which says his activities were profoundly embarrassing to his colleagues, both because these activities were deemed to compromise the Labour group's respectability, but also they offered to the activists a striking contrast to the group's own lack of impact.
Maybe they're embarrassed that their eyes weren't open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he was saying. He was laying some truth.
I've been asleep for Sorry, that was just from a suit. That's a quote from the Oliver Stone JFK movie.
Yeah, I've been asleep for 3 years.
I watched not recently, but also not ages ago. I've seen it like twice.
Right.
I rewatched it again when I was a grown up, but I still don't remember much about it.
It's not a perfect movie.
It has to be based on a lot of conjecture, doesn't it?
So. Yeah, it's bananas.
But then you know what? A lot of films are made up and they're good.
Yeah, exactly. Never Ending Story's a banger.
Chris's hot take.
I'm going to write
I'd like that on a t-shirt, actually.
We should put that on a t-shirt. That's yeah, that's a lot of things. A lot of movies are made up and they're good. Okay,
Lenin, he attracted the attention of Lenin as well. He was causing up such a stir that Lenin wrote about him and said that he felt that he was a flibbity gibbet and wasn't really a man of conviction. That's not a direct translation because I don't know what that is in Russian or even if they have that word.
I mean, a flippity gibbet sounds like that's like, you know, like calling someone a piece of shit back in the day. This flippity gibbet.
Like he was saying all of these things because he found himself on a path to success and he didn't really believe any of them. I counter that. I think Lenin was full of shit there because a lot of things that Grayson said and did, he had to believe in what he was saying, otherwise. Because if he was out for success and personal gain, his actions got him suspended from Parliament and stuff.
How long was he like permanently suspended after that then?
It doesn't say permanently suspended, it just says suspended.
Because like when Dennis Skinner shouts out, "Here comes Puss in Boots," he gets told, "Get out for a day." But
hold up, he said that? It's
for the budget, is it? Or the Queen's... No, it's the Queen's speech every year. Yeah. He was, sadly, no longer an MP, but he would shout something out and it's Black Rod would come in his stupid costume and one year Dennis Skinner shouted out, "Here comes Puss in Boots."
Black Rod almost pauses now to like wait for him to say something. But no, the Queen's speech that I was there for... people who are interested in horse racing were all up in arms because the Queen's speech was the same day as Royal Ascot. Is that a thing?
I think so,
Then everyone was like, "Oh, we need to be in Parliament doing this job that we have, but we want to watch the horses running."
Which party are you talking about?
I mean...
winking at Peter Bone across the aisle, like, he'll cross the floor for me.
But I think that year he shouted out something like, "Better get your skates on, first race is at 3.
Oh,
so
remember.
That's the one that I heard.
As soon as this started happening, I'm not, like, acting up, people started attacking him for his youth. And one of the members of the House said, "We must recognise that the man who can make a crowd show is not necessarily an organiser of men."
So they're going "Listen, you may talk a good game, son."
And they said, like you said, "Oh, well, no, you're calling these people traitors, but they undertook the task of founding a socialist movement."
Yeah, right.
"And you're
just
along for the ride," that sort of thing.
Did you face... I imagine that's a big thing that comes a lot to you, Danielle. They're like, "Oh, well, she's young and a woman, so I suppose she's..."
Yeah, but I really liked it because people would be like, "Oh, well... you're a young woman, what experience do you have?" And I'd be like, "Well, bitch, strap in."
Oh, you want experience? Oh, I got experience.
Let me tell you.
Well,
the guy running against me, he's a man and he's older, but I don't know, like, what experience does he have? And they're like, "Oh, but he has a penis, he doesn't need experience." So, yeah.
A fine head of hair.
I have a story. A political mystery of my own, if you will.
Oh,
if you want to hear it.
I'm biting my pen, I'm so excited.
So I call this tale "The Case of the Missing Tampon." So I shared an office in Parliament with my friend Paul, who was the MP for Glasgow North East.
I don't think it was his.
Sorry. Yeah.
Chris has already got a theory.
But on the door to her office, he had posters and maps of Glasgow. And then one day I was like, "The door is all full of your stuff. There's nothing of mine on the door." So he just went into my drawer, took out a tampon. And talked about being on my period in Parliament, and it became a big news story because no one had ever done that before.
Of course, yes.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
So he got this tampon out and he pinned it to the top of the door, like on the outside, like a piece of mistletoe. so it just kind of hung over the door. So if you walked past your office door in the corridor, you'd see like a map of Glasgow and then a hanging temple.
Oh my God.
And it was there for a while until one day it wasn't there. And you could tell it had been ripped because the pin was still there with like a little bit of the string.
A little bit of string.
So someone in fury.
Or someone needed it.
So the suspects are, was it Paul because he thought, oh, Danielle's door art's getting more recognition than mine? Was it the cleaner
he'd just take it
who
off.
Maybe
he wouldn't rip
had
it.
Enough of it? Yeah. Or was it someone who had an office down the end of my corridor, who walked past every day, and who was tall enough to be sort of eye line with the tampon?
Who was that? Who's that?
Certain Jacob Rees-Mogg. Did 100%. Jacob Rees-Mogg steal my tampon? Solved that office.
It's definitely him. It's definitely him. We solved 100%. It. It was him.
Danielle, can we keep that in the episode?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yes. I've told that story a couple of times, and I really hope that one day, like, you know, someone in his office is getting Google alerts, and they're like, "Mr. Rees-Mogg, did you steal a tampon from a Scottish lady?"
Like, he'll be like, "It was a gift for Sexton."
Nanny, at the end of the corridor, could you please go and...
And his nanny is a 6'3" woman. She's in her 80s.
This may sound like a tenuous link, but I like the idea that the work of Victor Grayson led to the fact that a tampon was hung up outside an office in Parliament.
Yes.
Because it didn't happen at that point, but he worked so hard for Votes for Women and campaigned for them vocally that eventually that would have fed into the dialogue, and he contributed to it eventually happening.
Absolutely.
And then eventually women being able to be MPs.
I really love that. Thank you for sharing that story.
That's an amazing story.
So we're okay, so he's definitely suspended.
They were starting to try and dull his voice in Parliament.
Right.
I mean, obviously he got suspended, but also they were like, whippersnapper.
Right.
Yeah.
They were saying things like while he might be charming, his politics lack depth and stuff.
Right. Okay.
When really he was just quite passionate.
Right.
He was angry as well that the national leadership had been unwilling to support his campaign in the first place. So he refused to join the Labour Party in the House of Commons. Unfortunately, this kind of like started to become his downfall because he rarely attended Parliament. Preferring instead to make speeches in favour of socialism. But the thing is, even though he was an MP at the time, he wasn't advocating democratic socialism. He was advocating revolution while he was an MP.
Okay.
So 300 debates took place in the Commons while he was the MP. He only voted in 32 of them. His behaviour in Parliament became more erratic, and it was at this point that it became clear that he had a very serious drink problem. So he'd get hammered, but also I think the pressure got to him because he became this sort of like massive
figurehead.
Poster boy.
Yeah,
and not an easy poster boy either. He wasn't a poster boy because, like you were saying, he could have been in films. He wasn't in films. He was shouting really controversial ideas at the top of his
and
voice.
It's not like he could just show up on Marr and grab a headline because he didn't exist.
Yeah.
Andrew Marr wasn't going to be born for another 10 years.
Do you remember when like David Cameron gave a speech? I think it was probably about 10 years ago, and he didn't use any notes, and everyone was like, "Oh my god, I can't believe he didn't use notes."
Yeah.
It was like, "Well, so what? Anyone can memorize a speech."
Mm.
The same kind of thing happened here with Grayson.
Yeah,
right.
Except he was really drunk, and he's like, "Let me tell you guys."
But even when he was drunk, he never lost his gift for
amazing. Came that naturally.
Yeah, yeah, and but also more importantly, he was offering hope to thousands of people.
Amazing.
The problem is that hope that he offered to those people, it didn't come quickly enough, did it?
No.
And because his behaviour was erratic.
Mm.
And he clearly had a drink problem. Come the next general election in 1910, he was roundly trounced and defeated. And I think this is where the parallels end, because I don't think you lost your seat because you were drunk all the time.
No.
It's really similar in what you were saying. Like, when you stand for election, you promise all these things, and then you've got a manifesto you're standing on. You're like, "Look at all this good shit that I'm going to do." And then you get voted in, but your party doesn't get into government. So you're like, oh, like you voted for me and I'm in, but we're not in government, so I can't do all of the good shit. I'm really sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Really, and also, but if you said that when you were campaigning, they wouldn't vote for you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's only if we win the election, yeah.
So he disappointed quite a few people, and so he lost his seat. He was obviously heavily drinking at the time, so he didn't have many people to help him in the 1910 election. And somebody who did campaign for him said that he was shocked by the sight of him attending meetings drunk. And he said it was a terrible blow to me because I was young, enthusiastic socialist from a working class family, and then this hero just turns up drunk to meetings. But it's really odd, isn't it? Because like people can have demons. Like, it doesn't mean that he wasn't the man that he thought he was.
No, absolutely.
It just means that he was going through a very difficult point.
Definitely being in Parliament that young as well. There's so many bars and things.
Yeah, and I think actually it seems like it's one thing that nobody will ever understand, really, because he got into Parliament with ideals totally at odds with almost everybody else.
He was a bit of a pioneer.
A little bit.
So,
but he lost. The Liberal candidate won. The Tory was second, and then he was third.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. The bottom of the poll. Oh, God. Must have been crushing. Bet he went out and had a right good knees up, though.
Yeah.
Well, his speech, he did a speech then, and he just said that he'd win the next election.
Right. Oh, right.
I like that he's like, oh, we'll win the next one, mate.
And so he left the Independent Labour Party, talked about forming a new party. He stopped being an MP and a politician.
Okay.
And he
joined a circus.
It was during this time he got married. He got married to an actress called Ruth Nightingale.
What's her name? I'll scratch her eyes out.
Ruth Nightingale.
I think she's still around. She's dead.
She's an actress. This has come out in the meantime, so no one knew it at the time. He was... the thing about him was he was bisexual.
Hey, hello.
And,
boy!
My man.
But that's not obviously not something he could broadcast.
Yeah.
No.
Also, he was very fanciable. people were throwing
the loony left like me.
They were throwing themselves at him.
Yeah.
And so he did get married. He had no income from being a member of Parliament, but he made a living from lecture tours. But his health started deteriorating because he was drinking heavily. This is interesting as well. Despite everything that he was talking about and advocating, when the prospect of war came around, he was actually for it. But in a very sort of like, we have to get rid of this menace.
Gotcha. Okay. Right.
And so because he was pro conscription, that lost him a lot of followers as well. Between coming back from the war and before he went missing, he took an interest in Irish politics, and he made several secret trips to Ireland where he had talks with people such as Michael Collins.
Well, the guy who went up in Apollo 11? No, that's a different Michael.
The loneliest man in the world. In the universe.
Because of these trips to Ireland, he attracted the attention of a special branch. So Basil Thompson, who was the head of the special branch, asked one of his agents, Maundy Gregory, to spy on Grayson, who he described as a dangerous communist revolutionary, and because he had friends among the Irish rebels or whatever. And so Maundy Gregory went to spy on Grayson. Grayson got wise to him, and they didn't get on. They had an antagonistic relationship, but Grayson, because he was being spied on, he started spying on the guy that was spying on him.
What?
And he found out. He uncovered that Maundy Gregory, this spy for the special branch, was involved in a corrupt relationship with David Lloyd George, who was the British Prime Minister at the time.
Oh, my God.
Didn't see that coming.
No.
And so the extent of that corruption was that he discovered, and this is off his own back, he realised that he was being spying on by this bloke, so he spied on him in return and uncovered that Gregory... He was acting as a middleman for the Prime Minister, Lloyd George, for selling political honours for anywhere between £10,000 and £40,000, which in this money is like
anything from
like $750,000 to I think £2 million.
Right.
Whoa.
And so he discovered that they were selling these political honours, and Grayson didn't keep it quiet. So he would say in these meetings that people were still coming over, he was like, the sale of these honours is a national scandal. It can be traced right to 10 Downing Street. And this is his downfall, because he then said, it can be traced to 10 Downing Street to a monocled dandy with offices in Whitehall. I know this man, and one day I will name him. And Maundy Gregory used to wear a monocle. So it was obvious who he was talking about. A few days later, Victor Grayson was beaten up on the Strand.
What did he call me? He called me a what? A monocle dandy?
Monocle dandy.
Go kick his ass, boys.
He kept making the speeches, and he kept threatening to name the man. We now come to September 1920. He was drinking with friends when he received a telephone message, and he told his friends that he had to go to Queen's Hotel in Leicester Square, and he'd be back shortly, and was never seen again.
Yeah, Emily Pankhurst has said she wants to see me over at the hotel. My God, I'll be right back, fellas, but don't, don't wait up for me, papa.
Turns out that there was a man, he was called Flemwell, George Flemwell.
Yeah.
And he was
he was always coughing.
He was an artist. He was an artist. And he was painting a picture on the Thames. He only realised this in the meantime because he saw Grayson enter a house on the riverbank.
Right.
Okay.
And he knew Grayson because he painted his portrait before the war.
Oh.
But God, he didn't realise at the time, because he wasn't reported missing until several months later anyway. But then he was like, when he was reported missing, he was like, no, I saw him going to the house. That house. And this didn't come out, this didn't come into light until the 1960s. So 40 years later.
For fuck's sake.
That house was revealed to be owned by Maundy Gregory.
That's it.
Right, Danielle wants to solve the mystery, but I think I've got an idea of my own.
So he was never seen alive again. They believe he was murdered. To keep him quiet. And then after this happened, Maundy Gregory continued to sell honours for the next 12 years. And it was in 1932 he attempted to sell a knighthood to Lieutenant Commander Edward Billiard Leek. He pretended he was interested and then straight away reported it to Scotland Yard.
Ha, what a bitch.
And Gregory was arrested. Unfortunately, he was able to do a couple of loopholes.
Hey, what? I didn't do nothing. What are you
doing?
Well,
no, he was able to blackmail people that he'd sold honours to.
This piece of shit.
And so, in return for not naming them in court, he said, I'm not going to name you in court if you pay me all this money. He pleaded guilty, so therefore he didn't have to give evidence. And so he was only sentenced to 2 months and a fine of 50 quid.
Ah.
When he got out of prison, this Gregory guy, he was persuaded to live in Paris, where he was paid a pension of £2,000 a year by the Conservative Party.
Nothing has changed.
No, nothing ever will. It will, it will. Wait till Danielle's leader.
Well, I've got a request. Suze, when you're my hype man,
yes.
Can your official name, can your official name be Monocled Dandy? Because I love that.
And I just keep rocking up with a gold top cane and a monocle. Hello, hello, hello. Something to say. And then I throw the monocle aside. I toss the cane in the air and I'm like, what, 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 what?
I reckon you could make a fortune doing Jacob Rees-Mogg burlesque.
I am very tall.
No, you could wear stilettos and then do an amazing...
I could do one of them death drops, and then I could move all the fellas out the front row word, get out of the way, and then just lie across all the seats.
And then there could be a tampon hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah.
And you could just pinch
just
it up.
I just tear it down and then I eat it. It's made out of spun sugar. I just go, and then I just keep pulling children out of my waistcoat.
I'm glad you said waistcoat.
My waistcoat, which is covered in velvet vaginas.
So it's pretty obvious what happened to Grayson. You would think. Okay. I will say this one thing before we finish. It's that there is a conspiracy theory that he didn't die. And he was just paid off.
Well, and then he disappeared or whatever.
Yeah, well, and then Gregory went to live in Paris.
Well, 19 years after he vanished, someone collected his war medals from the New Zealand Embassy in London.
Uh-huh.
But the Ministry of Defence, they did insist that they would not have handed these medals over unless the man could prove he was Grayson. The reason that smells funny to me is that if the Ministry of Defence would have been like, but you've been missing for 20 years.
Yeah, so. And declared dead? No, he was never declared
think,
dead.
But someone's got the wrong computer and Linda didn't send the file over, so they didn't know.
Or he just put his fingers to the other person's lips and just go...
No one will ever believe you.
There is apparently a guy called Harold Smallwood, who's a former CID officer. Apparently, he said after the war, he got to know Victor Grayson in 1948. And he said that after his disappearance, he worked in numerous schools under a false name in Ireland, Kent, Sussex, Switzerland, and Austria.
Right.
And he told him that he rarely spent more than one term in any school because he was usually asked to leave because of his drinking and unorthodox method of teaching. And then this Smallwood guy lost contact with Grayson in 1950. So he could have been got and killed in 1920.
I don't know.
Or maybe he had like a really long game plan and he thought, I'll sit it out, let everyone think I've died, I'll like get an allotment and just do some gardening and then...
someone will walk past and be like, Victor Grayson? And he'll be like, I don't go by that name anymore.
1983, yeah. Walks into Parliament like, here we fucking go.
I reckon he got got.
I think they he got got. Yeah, I think we've covered that, yeah.
Yeah.
Had you heard of him, Danielle?
No, I hadn't. Right. Been very interesting learning about him.
It has.
In Scotland, there's a Keir Hardie Society, and quite a lot of people that I know in the Labour Party are in it and do different talks and everything. Maybe we could start a Grayson Society.
Yeah!
So I reckon they got him. You reckon he got. What do you think, Suze? What's your...
It's really just sort of telling the story through modern means.
Okay, so... picture the scene. It's Victor Grayson's first day in Parliament and it's 1907. He's 25 and he's walked into the dining hall and this is what happens. This is all the other MPs, okay? Oh my God, would you look over there? There's a guy and he's young and he's got great hair. I heard he got a landslide in some by-election. I heard he's a communist, his name's Victor Grayson. Oh, 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 Victor, you can't sit with us, go find a table of your own. Watch out, dickwad, cause in a few years you'll be gone. Parliament's a place for people with class. If you mess with the system, you're out on your ass. Oh, Victor boy, you sure got a lot to learn. Making speeches by co-op socialism so loudly. OMG, he reckons he's Labour's lost leader like Danielle Rowley. That's gonna come true. Hype, hype, hype. He thinks uni is a place of make-believe refuge. This guy's crazy ego is fucking huge. Let's make him disappear in 1920. Can't vote in Parliament if you're absentee. Hey, Keir Hardie, get around him from the Commons bar. Ooh, they'll never mention Victor Grayson on Andrew Marr. It was a drinking game gone wrong that meant everything's shit now.
Way, that
I didn't record it another time. I did it just then. That's why everyone's clapped so much.
Nice. It's great. One of your best.
Thanks. That's really brilliant. Chuffed with it, actually.
I think it's because you were so invested in the source material.
Yeah.
Yes, that is what happened. And I've got lots of notes here, which is how I was able to write such a good song, definitely.
Cool. Eddie, thanks again for coming on, Danielle.
Danielle, thank you so much.
Where can people find you?
And I'm sorry that we were so insensitive about picking a socialist politician because we had a socialist politician come on. I mean...
Don't you worry. Thank you. It meant I got to tell my Jacob Rees-Mogg Stole My Tampon story. So.
That's
thank
a great you. Story.
But in 20 years' time, it'll be the Rowley-led Labour Party.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say in 20 years' time, it'll be a mystery about your disappearance. Thanks, guys.
I think that says a lot about your self-esteem.
Yeah. But,
so where can we find you then?
Yes.
If our listeners wanted to seek you out.
Oh, I thought you meant like roaming the streets of Dalkeith. on Twitter,
there's your answer,
I guess.
Listeners.
At Danny Rowley on Twitter. And yeah, roaming the streets of Dalkeith, yeah.
All right.
Well, I'll head up.
Thank you.
And obviously, we're available, Mystery on the Rocks and all the things, ROX on Facebook and
the socials.
Twitter. And no, ROX on Twitter and Instagram. I always fucking get it wrong. CKS on Facebook and Mystery on the Rocks, spelled CKS, at gmail.com if you want to send us some mail.
And also, before you stop listening, listener, 1 week today, we're doing a live stream.
On Thursday the 28th
of May.
And you can find it on Twitch. You can
twitch.tv/mysteryontherocks.
Yes. And it'll be a lot of fun.
It is going to be fun.
Keep an eye on our socials because we'll tweet out the ingredients for the cocktail ahead of time so you can make along with us.
Drink it with us, bitches. Also, you can see Masood playing video games and chatting up a storm and making cocktails and that on twitch.tv/MasoodMinus. And you can see me singing and shit, but it's good. twitch.tv/ZeusKempner. Lucky you!
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Thank you.
Bye, for listening.
Bye. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com. Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.